So, as always, so lovely to sit with y'all. Always have a temptation, like, let's just sit. Not sure how that would be received. So today, I want to. Some of you were with me last Friday for the day long I did on belonging, and thank you so much for being there. And I want to sort of stay with that to some degree. And I'm so sorry. I'm going to mute myself. Just I don't know if you can hear it, what's going on in the background, but I'm going to mute myself for just a minute. If it's not dogs, it's something else. So forgive me. Staying with this theme, exploration around belonging and how primarily do we allow ourselves to belong to ourselves? And this invitation to sit in the bones, to rest in the bones, is an invitation to that, being able to hold on to whatever's happening externally. Can we at least be open to the idea of belonging to this physical form, again, these bones in this body? And that's not always easy. It's not always easy for women. It's not always easy given the relative level of trauma we've had in our lives. So I'm not just saying, oh, it's just like that. But in this exploration of how do we belong, the sort of question of where, and years ago, and I'm not sure if I said this in the Thursday class or in the day long, but this notion of what we are somewhat nomadic. And I know myself, there was a time in the class, I think I mentioned this last time we met, of how many times we've all moved. And there's kind of an average of like 12 or 10 times, and not just like moving down the street, but changing states, changing communities. And this, there can be a quality of like, well, where do I belong? And how can we, by invoking this sense of the mountain, the earth element, there's a way that wherever we are, there can be a place of, okay, I can at least rest here. But our connection to the land, for many of us, has been broken. And it's that notion of brokenness that I kind of want to play with. And I came across this book, Terry Tempest Williams, Finding Beauty in the Natural World. And she is lovely. And in this book, well, does many things, but what I want to start with is her offering of her time that she spent in Italy studying mosaics. And again, thinking of this theme of brokenness and our relationship to what is broken, whether it's our relationship to our ancestors, our relationship to the land, our relationship to each other, and that we, I would imagine, have had relationships that kind of broke. I don't know if anyone that either read the book or saw the movie Eat, Pray, Love, when Julie Roberts' character, the author's name that I'm blanking on, oh my God, sorry, when she talks about her, why she got divorced, and she's talking with it with the friends she met in Italy, and she's like, she didn't have any other word for it. Like, we broke it, you know, in this way that sometimes we break our relationships, that sometimes that are repairable and sometimes not, but this sort of, I'm sort of laying this thread of brokenness, what's broken. But from this vantage point, a mosaic, she writes, is a conversation between what is broken. A mosaic is a conversation that takes place on surfaces. A mosaic is a conversation with light, with color, with form. A mosaic is a conversation with time. She goes to work or study with folks who are masters at doing mosaics. I'm sorry, I want to find the rules. Forgive me. Here we go. There are rules for making a mosaic. The play of light is the first rule of mosaic. And I remember that, I don't know if you remember the song, Leonard Cohen's anthem song, where it's the crack, that's where the light comes in. And being able to hold that too as a thread, like that which is broken. And within ourselves, I think we can. Well, I know I've had times I'm like, I'm still totally broken. And the ways in which areas in our lives that we do feel broken, that's where the light comes in. That's where the opportunities for learning and growth and healing come from, right? So the play of light is the first rule of mosaic. And wanting to kind of invite, as I'm reading this, just to kind of reflect about our lives are mosaics, right? These broken pieces that come together, and to kind of just hold that image as I read this. The play of light is the first rule of mosaic. The surface of mosaic is irregular, even angled, to increase the dance of light on the terraces. The terraces are irregular, rough, individualized, unique. If you are creating a horizontal line, place the terraces vertically. I might be saying that incorrectly, and it's my understanding those are the pieces, the charts, as you were. If you're creating a vertical line, place the pieces horizontally. The line in mosaic is supreme. The flow of the line is what matters, so the eye is never disturbed or interrupted. The background is very important in emphasizing the mosaic pattern. There must always be at least one line of these pieces that outlines the pattern. Sometimes there will be as many as three lines defining the pattern as part of the background. That which is background becomes foreground in our lives. That which is foreground becomes background. Right, this play of movement of pieces in our lives. There is perfection in the imperfection. The interstices or gaps between the pieces speak their own language in mosaics, right? The gaps in between when we can really be struggling with aloneness or depression or disease in the body or those places of real struggle. That's the language of our lives, right? Where we, again, should we choose to use those opportunities to grow, to really find resilience in ourselves, to find connection with others. Many colors are used to create one color from afar. Different hues of the same color were always used in ancient mosaics. The distance from which the mosaic is viewed is important to the design, color, and execution of the mosaic. And she writes about playing with it, and up close it looks like all messed up and bad. And the instructor's like, no, step back. And when she steps back, it looks great. You know, this notion of bringing in a sense of perspective. Can we get some perspective in our lives when we're in the weeds, so to speak, or in the minutiae of our lives of like, these things aren't working. So we step back. Can you step back? And the equanimity teaching is, can we get that 30,000 foot view to really look with grandmother eyes about what's happening in our lives? Like, in the scheme of things, okay. Can I look for the beauty and the pattern such that we can look for these patterns as ways of being able to grow, such that the patterns that we are now cultivating are patterns that are liberatory. The patterns, the habit patterns of the heart, we are allowing those to form such that they lead us to ease, peace, contentment, rather than what we can be habituated to, more suffering, complaining, dissatisfaction, replaying old narratives that no longer serve us. And the final rule, the play of light is the first and the last rule. Can we avail ourselves of light? You know, the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows, they're both there. Can we allow there to be enough light? Can we let in enough light in our lives to both illuminate the darkness and not to take away or distract, right? The moon has its cycle, it is full, sometimes it is dark. It's necessary for our evolution, but to never lose sight of the light, right? The line there is like, you can learn this technique in 15 minutes, she says, but it will take you a lifetime to master it, right? That's pretty much how it goes with our lives. There might be one more quote. But again, this notion of the conversation that's happening between the play of light and dark and shadows and imperfections and perfections and distance and perspective are all conversations, threads of conversations in our lives. Should we choose to weave that particular tapestry that we can then use as a cloak to say, okay, I can show up in the world from a place of belonging with all my broken bits, because we are creating a mosaic that is unique to us, our life conditioning, our karma, our ancestors, where we live, how we live, privileges, not privileges, all of that are woven into the end product, which might be that shawl, but they're also the fragments that then make up the mosaic of our lives, which again rest upon these broken bits, right? And again, to come back to this notion in which there can be our relationship to ourselves, to our authentic selves, as opposed to our ego version of ourselves, which is a whole nother talk. But the way that the how we think we should be, or the lives we think we should have, that's that. When we allow ourselves through this practice, in many ways, to be able to have insight to what's actually true. What is the language of my heart? What are the values that I want to orient towards? What is my North Star, that the constellation that embeds the North Star that can guide me in this lifetime? How do we stay connected to that in when all things are in play in our lives, external conditions of flood, fire, pandemic, everything that's going on, and then our own relative sense of disconnection to ourselves? A friend of mine sent me this article. There's a link to it on the resources with Stolen, is generously put together and will be there. And he's a writer that is in Vermont. It's a little bit off because the article is about the white man's relationship to land through literature. But there's a quote in here that's like, we begin with the land, writes Joy Harjo. We emerge from the earth of our mother, and our bodies will be returned to the earth. We are the land. And again, as I was saying earlier, there's a way that we can feel very disconnected. Again, some of us are no longer living in the land of our birth, right? Which can create a disconnect. And how can we allow ourselves to drop into what is our, and actually inquire, what is the relationship to the land upon which we now live? Part of that inevitably is the history of what happened on that land, to whom did it belong to originally, from whom was it stolen, and all of that. However, being able to drop into a sense of aligning ourselves with the natural world. Our lack of this, the fact that we, as culturally over generations, have not done this, some of us in certain cultures, is sort of the, we are now living the causes of that, of our profound disconnection to the earth and what's happening with climate change and the impending doom that seems to be coming in terms of what lies ahead because of choices that we've made. So can we allow ourselves to depart from that habituation to remember our first relationship, right? First relationship to the land. From David Wise, I think I shared from this before. He writes about ground. Ground is what lies beneath our feet. It is a place where we already stand, a state of recognition. The place or circumstance to which we belong, whether we wish to or not. It's what holds and supports us, but also what we do not want to be true. It's what challenges us physically, psychologically. It is living. It is the living underlying foundation that tells us what we are, where we are, what season we are in, what, no matter what we wish in the abstract, is about to happen in our body, in our world, in the conversation between the two, between our body and the world, between our body and the natural form that is around us, that we can tend to not pay attention to. To come to ground is to find a home in circumstances. And in the very physical body we inhabit, in the midst of all those circumstances, and above all, to face the truth, no matter how difficult the truth may be. To come to ground is to begin the courageous conversation, to step into difficulty. By taking that first step, begin the movement through all the difficulties to find the support and foundation that has been beneath our feet all along, a place to step into, onto, a place upon which to stand, a place from which to step. Right, and these offerings from David Wyatt and from Terry Tempest Williams of what is the conversation, a conversation between that which is broken in terms of the mosaic, a conversation between ourselves and the land. Can we attune ourselves to drop into the conversation as a form of belonging? To step out of the sense of I'm doing something wrong, I broke this relationship, or this broke, or I'm broken, or all that. That doesn't actually serve if we stop there and kind of land in the sort of suffering of like, oh no, I've messed up my life. Okay, how do we have the conversation of these are the pieces? What am I creating? So, okay, I'm going to read one poem because I love it. And it, I think I'll tie it in. and it's by Sergei Hiroshim. When they bombed Hiroshima, the explosion formed, speaking of broken, the explosion formed a mini supernova so that every living animal, human, or plant that received direct contact with the rays from the sun was instantly turned to ash. What was left of the city soon followed. The long-lasting damage from the nuclear radiation caused an entire city and its population to turn into powder. When I was born, my mom said that I looked around the hospital room with a stare that said, "This, I've done this before." She said, "I have old eyes." And when my grandpa Ganji died, I was only 5 years old, but I took my mom by the hand and told her, "Don't worry, he'll come back as a baby." And yet, for someone who has apparently done this already, I still haven't figured anything out yet. My knees still buckle every time I get on stage. My self-confidence can be measured out in teaspoons. Mixed into my poetry, it still tastes funny in my mouth. But in Hiroshima, some people were wiped clean away, leaving only a wristwatch, a diary page, a mud flap from a bicycle. So no matter that I have inhibitions to fill my pockets, I keep trying, hoping that one day I'll write the poem that I will be proud to let sit in the museum exhibit as the only proof I've existed. My parents named me Sarah, which is a biblical name. In the original story, God told Sarah she could do something impossible, and she laughed. Because the first Sarah, she didn't know what to do with the impossible. And me, well, neither do I. Because I see the impossible every day. Impossible is trying to connect in this world, trying to hold on to others when things are blowing up around you, knowing that while you are speaking, they aren't just waiting there for their turn to talk. They hear you. They feel exactly what you feel at the same time you feel it. It's what I strive for every moment I open my mouth, that impossible connection. There's a piece of wall in Hiroshima that was burnt black by the radiation. On the first step, a person blocked the rays from hitting the stone. The only thing left is a permanent shadow of positive light. After the A-bomb specialist said it would take 75 years for the radiation-damaged soil of Hiroshima to grow anything again, but that spring, there were new buds popping up from the earth. When I meet you in the moment, I'm no longer a part of your future. And I start to quickly become a part of your past. But in that instant, I get to share a part of your present, and you get to share a part of mine. And that is the greatest present of all. So if you tell me I can do the impossible, I will probably laugh at you. I don't know if I can change the world yet, because I don't know that much about it. And I don't know that much about reincarnation either. But if you make me laugh hard enough, sometimes I'll forget what century I'm in. This isn't my first time here. This isn't my last time here. And these aren't the last words I'll share, but just in case, I'm trying my hardest to get it right this time around. So I'm gonna ask you to close your eyes. Just to take a minute and check in. How's the body? And this desire to get it right this time around. This desire, perhaps, to do the impossible, to have that impossible connection, to be present with ourselves, to be present to another. And what are the conversations that need to happen? The conversations between the play of light and shadow, the conversations between the broken bits, I put in quotes. And if you were to create a mosaic of your life, the different colors, the shapes, that which you may have deemed broken, changes, movements, transitions, pieces of your life that feel meaningful, those moments out of a crossroad when you went right or when you went left or when you just sat down. Can you allow yourself to play with this idea of what does the mosaic of your life look like? If you allow yourself to pick up some pieces, terrazze of your life, what might that look like? Could you allow the bits to have a conversation? Could you allow yourself to have the conversation of yourself, your body, this form, this earth that is around you, this place of ground, this place of home? A mosaic is a conversation that takes place on the surface, a conversation with light, with color, with form, with experience, with mistakes, with triumphs, with joy, with sorrow, a conversation with time, a conversation with ourselves. What would this mosaic of your life look like? And what conversations might you want to have to help you fill in, add to, enhance this mosaic? So I think I'm going to stop there. And I very much appreciate your kind attention and would love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.